And now we turn to another effort to help Californians preserve and document their own stories in their own words. This one's focused on people whose lives have been affected by the criminal justice system. A community writing workshop in San Diego has just published a new collection called Reclaiming Our Stories. It features first-person narratives from 19 emerging writers, many of whom have struggled with homelessness, gangs, or childhood trauma. And joining me now are two of the book's contributors, Beto Vasquez and Truth Sutton.
Hi, hello, Sasha. Thank you for having us.
Yes, we really appreciate it.
Beto, let's start with you. You were one of the first to join the community storytelling workshops about a year and a half ago. What drew you to the idea of learning to write your own story?
I've just been on this trend of challenging myself and learning how to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And so Reclaiming Our Stories, the writing group, really provided me an opportunity to kind of step out of my comfort zone, and it ended up being really therapeutic for me.
You spent most of your life incarcerated, right?
I've spent a good portion of my life incarcerated. That's correct.
And now you're pursuing your master's in biology at UC San Diego, and the story you wrote explores how you turned your life around, and it also includes an encounter that you had in the research lab where you were studying malaria. Why don't you read us a passage?
I couldn't help but to notice that the only Latino folks here were either custodial or facility staff. Everyone I worked with in this lab was either European, Asian, or white. Although I never really tripped out on this, subconsciously I was very aware, and this would only heighten my desire to excel. One morning, while preparing for an assay in my bench area, I was caught off guard by an interesting encounter. I had just prepared my cup of coffee and was headed back to my work area when a Mexican man approached me. This man would regularly come in to fill up the various gas tanks that we used in the labs, you know, the nitrogen, oxygen, etc. As was common practice and continues to be, being the minority in situations, I organically tend to attempt to connect with others who look like me, culturally or subculturally. In a subtle attempt to connect, I proceeded with the usual courtesy by nodding my head in acknowledgement, as if to say, I see you, and you are deserving of the same hospitality I would extend to anyone here. After all, growing up, I had been taught to treat all people as human, sharing the same dignity and respect for the transients in the alley, as well as any professional person. Incarceration had further instilled in me the importance of acknowledging folks regardless of their position. On this momentous occasion, I was stopped in my tracks when this man who I had never conversed with beyond pleasantries stopped, turned to me and asked, "Do you work here?" Stunned and unclear about his question, I responded, "Yes, why?" Intrigued, he continued to ask, "But you don't just clean here, you actually work here?" I reassured him once again that I worked as a research assistant. His response would leave a resonating impression upon me for the rest of my life. Elated, this stranger quickly shouted out to his work partner, who was a white man, and said, "See, I told you we have representation here, and not just cleaning." Seeing the surprise on my face, he explained to me that his white counterpart had expressed that he had never seen any Mexicans, specifically, working in the labs they serviced. Well, he wouldn't be able to say that anymore.
Truth Sutton, your story is about something very different. As a teenager in San Diego, you got caught up with a man who was a pimp, and that's what you chose to write about. Can you read a passage for us?
Yes, I can. I was born in the 80s when most of our parents were addicted to crack cocaine. My mom was around, but she wasn't capable of being there for me because of her drug addiction. She signed over her parental rights while she was in jail. I was never comfortable as a kid. And by the time my mom got her stuff together, I had already created my patterns of staying on the go. So I never really had to deal with my pain. I didn't slow down and I didn't reflect on what I had been through. I just kept adding more to my chaos and I began to perpetuate my family's cycle of addiction. Ecstasy, feeling love, and music were my addictions. I thought Matthew was the love of my life. He had a charismatic vibe that was attractive to me. In fact, he was attracted to a lot of females, too. He was good with words. He dressed nice. He sang well. He smelled delicious. We had great sex, and he knew a lot about the game. He knew I was a lost, vulnerable girl on ecstasy. I told him my whole life story the first night, and he listened to me. He listened well. I was willing to do whatever it took to be around him. I had previous experience with a pimp, but now I chose to pay Matthew. I paid him everything I made. I never disrespected him by talking to other pimps. I always represented him as being the pimp he wanted to be portrayed as. I held on to every word he said. Once he told me to stand in the corner, and I did. He even beat me up one time at the trolley station because another pimp said I was out of pocket. But behind closed doors, he was a sweet guy. He was conflicted and lost, and I saw the potential of what he could have been in spite of the beatings and sexual violence. Ecstasy and the music we were listening to made everything seem right. We listened to rap music that was centered around pimping, so my life with Matthew and his abuse seemed like the norm.
How did you get out of that situation, Truth?
Whew. Because of my mom. She never, like, gave up on me or let me live the lifestyle easily. She always would call and, you know, check up on me and tell me to come home. And it was just, you know, it was hard. It was like an addiction. But during the end of that lifestyle, I had went to jail. And while I was in jail, I found out I was pregnant with my son. So my son was another reason for me to, you know, get my life together.
What's the most surprising thing you guys learned from reading or listening to the other stories in this book? I mean, there's such a big range. You have a Muslim woman who was homeless as a child in San Diego. You've got a teen boy who watched his brother get arrested by a SWAT team. What surprised you?
For me, it was just the struggle of what a lot of people have been through or are dealing with in our community. Southeast San Diego, the area that we live in, our people have been through a lot, yet they're survivors, and they're willing to put it on paper and, you know, be free.
You know, growing up in a rough neighborhood, growing up as a male, growing up with privilege that you're sometimes not aware of, it's really tricky being able to step outside of that and taking in what the hardships are that other people that don't look like you or perhaps that even grow in the same neighborhoods as you. You know, that's really what this book is doing, again, kind of allowing us the opportunity to crack that open and normalizing these situations, normalizing lifestyles, normalizing mistakes and making mistakes for other folks so that they can be okay with it.
Beto Vasquez and Truth Sutton, thank you so much for joining us on the California Report.
Thank you very much, Sasha, for having us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Beto Vasquez and Truth Sutton are two of the contributors to the new collection Reclaiming Our Stories, first-person stories from newly emerging writers in San Diego.